welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine, and as always, that is John Rauhaus playing in the background. I probably do not need to remind you that the Fretboard Journal is a reader-supported publication, which means that readers and listeners such as yourself help power this magazine, help make it as good as humanly possible, and have helped raise the bar on what it means to be a guitar magazine over the last decade and almost a half. So we encourage you to subscribe to the magazine if you haven't yet. We have both digital subscriptions as well as print subscriptions. I'll include links for both of those in the notes for this show. Today on the show, I am talking to the one and only Tal Wilkenfeld. Tal, in case you do not know, is an incredible bass virtuoso from Australia. She's played with everyone. She's played with Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, Prince, so many luminaries over the years. I didn't want to talk to her about any of that, though, because earlier this year she released an incredible record called Love Remains. This is very much a Tal Wilkenfeld record. It is not a I'm going to dazzle you with solo virtuoso stuff. It's not what you might be thinking a bass virtuoso would churn out. These are real songs, and they're incredible, and the production is great. I only, as a general policy, talk to people on this podcast whose records I truly love and have listened to, and I can tell you I've listened to Love Remains endlessly, so I'm glad we got to have this quick chat. I hope you do enjoy it. In other news, the Fretboard Journal 44 is out now, mailing to everybody, available at Barnes & Nobles and everywhere else that they're available as I speak. Check it out. Mandolin Orange is in that issue. M. Ward, a mammoth feature on Johnny Winter, Chris Benson of Benson Amplifiers, and so much more. Again, go to fretboardjournal.com to get all the details on that. And this podcast and every podcast that we do is sponsored by our friends over at Mono Cases. You can go to monocreators.com to read up on what they do. They have, these are like gig bags on steroids. I have the Vertigo electric guitar case. It has a pocket that fits my Telecaster perfectly. These are amazing gig bags that will live with you for the rest of your life. They will outlast you. Super durable and just so ergonomically well made that they kind of leave all the other gig bags that I know of in the dust. So check it out. Everything they do is so cool. Monocreators.com. I can't thank them enough for helping sponsor this podcast, as well as the cardboard mailers that the Fretboard Journal comes out in and so many other projects that we are up to. All right, without further ado, here is my chat with Tal Wilkenfeld. We're hoping we can get her into our office here in Seattle and maybe get a video with her soon as well, which would be a ton of fun. But in the meantime, here's our chat. And again, her new record out this year is called Love Remains, and I cannot recommend it enough. Where are you right now?
Los Angeles.
Okay. And is Los Angeles home or New York?
LA.
Okay, cool. Well, I got to be honest with you. I've known about you for many years, and whenever a publicist sends me a CD by a quote-unquote virtuoso, I kind of always dread putting it on because usually the songs are just sort of vehicles for solos, and I was so pleasantly surprised when I heard your record. It's fantastic, and there are actual songs there. It's actually great music. So congratulations for that.
Yeah, thank you. It's definitely a deep re-education because a lot of people do know me as, I guess, a virtuoso, for lack of a better term. So, it's an education that I'm writing songs now.
No, I mean, and they're great. What was the seed for this record, and how long has it been brewing in your mind?
Well, I first started writing songs the first day I picked up the guitar when I was 14. And I got sidetracked when I started just becoming monofocused on the guitar and wanting, my ability to communicate through an instrument to be as seamless as it was to speak English.
Uh-huh.
And so I just sort of abandoned words, and one thing led to another, to quote my own song.
Yeah.
And I started gigging with all the artists that I've played with, and then at a certain point, I just realized that I had abandoned my roots and I wanted to start writing songs with words again. So here I am.
Yeah. Let's go back a bit. Growing up in Australia, I mean, I've interviewed a few Australians. I've interviewed Tommy Emmanuel and Adam Miller and Paul Kelly. What were you listening to when you first kind of became infatuated with the guitar?
Jimi Hendrix, Rage Against the Machine, Herbie Hancock. Those were my first three CDs.
Okay. And and were you able to find a local instructor to kind of steer you on the right path?
Yeah, I did start out with a teacher, but I don't know if I was the best student. I kind of went off on my own and did my own thing. I tend to have, you know, figured out my own way of learning and doesn't always match up to a teacher's curriculum.
Yeah. What was your way of learning? What was your preferred method?
I like to ask a lot of questions.
Okay.
And the questions are often rooted in concept rather than technique.
Okay.
You know, like what is someone trying to say, as opposed to how do you play that? You know, what's the meaning behind what you're saying there?
Got it. And then when did you take up the bass?
When I was 17.
And was that, were you curious about it, or was it due to a gig, or how did that come about?
I wasn't allowed to practice much when I lived in Sydney.
Okay.
Because I was told to focus on my schoolwork.
Okay.
So when I moved to America, I was very excited with this newfound freedom and started trying to practice all day, and that lasted about a week until I gave myself tendonitis. I had to stop playing for a while, and then when I was ready to start playing again and I healed, I moved to the bass.
Got it.
So it was a happy accident.
Okay, and you came up you came to the States for music school, right?
Yeah.
Cool. And which one was that?
It's called Llama. I don't know if that's still the name of it or what the name of it is. I didn't really spend too much time there. Again, I don't consider myself a great student in the traditional sense, but it was definitely a way to get into the music scene here in America.
Yes, which you certainly did.
So
you know, I know you actually opened for The Who not too long ago. Were you working or were you doing Love Remains songs on that tour?
I was.
How did that go over?
I got a really great response from the audience. So we were getting standing ovations in nearly every town, which was very surprising to me because, you know, we're playing songs that people have never heard before, and a lot of them are just there to see The Who. And yeah, we got a very good reception, so I was pleasantly surprised, and so was Pete Townsend.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I sent the music to him, and he was very supportive of it, and that's sort of how the whole thing came to be. So, yeah.
And was that sort of the debut for a lot of these songs in terms of people hearing them in public?
Yeah.
That's quite a way to demo.
It's so funny. I have so many stories like this throughout my career. Like the very first time I sung on stage, like to, you know, I suppose outside of maybe like a club once or twice, was with Herbie Hancock at Carnegie Hall.
Clearly, you guys had, he had heard you sing before, right?
Well, he heard me sing, yeah, but our first show was there. So we did it in rehearsal, but yeah, it was literally one of my first times singing ever was at Carnegie Hall, which is pretty hilarious. And the first time I recorded on tape was with Prince. And I just have a lot of hilarious first time stories, you know?
Yeah. Get all this
first time
stress
playing the stress music was opening for The Who. That's a really blessed life I have.
Yeah, you're going to have a hard time topping some of these if you want to keep going this route.
I mean, I'm not looking to, like, compete with myself. You know, I just, I think that the process of continuing to do this for years and years is going to be a real gift. Yeah. If I can make that happen.
Sure. So, I know you're constantly touring and you do a fair amount of session stuff too. When did you carve out the time to do Love Remains?
It was actually a relatively quick process. Despite the fact that it took a long time to get out into the public. It was really about 10 days in the studio. So, yeah, it wasn't that difficult to carve out that time. It just all the other elements around releasing a record is what slowed it down.
Of course. And then, what did you, I know you've played Sadowski instruments for a while, but what did you actually bring into the studio gear-wise?
Most of the record was done on Jackson Browne's P-Bass.
Okay.
Both his P-Bass, actually, because I didn't have a P-Bass yet. A Harmony Bass that I just purchased. Then I did one song on a Sadowski 5-string, which is Haunted Love. You can see that on YouTube. Like, we just did it on a live version of that on Paste. I use a 5-string with a capo on the 3rd fret for that song. And then guitar-wise, I was using some old Gibsons. I used a baritone acoustic guitar on Corner Painter, which was, again, Jackson Browne's guitar. And then he ended up getting one made for me that I've been now using on the road.
Who made it?
He made it with him and a luthier named Billy Asher. Like, they basically took a body of a Yamaha guitar or something, and then they put a different face on it that sort of push the bridge back and, you know, make it playable with these heavy strings. So it's just a make-your-own guitar.
That's pretty awesome.
The brand. Yeah. And then Ben Harper's Epiphone guitar. I used that on one thing after another. It's now my guitar. I now play it on tour. Those are pretty much the instruments.
you're borrowing from some pretty amazing players. Have you played with Jackson a bunch, and so you're in the family now?
Jackson was the executive producer on the album and has been a friend for some time now, and acted almost like a consultant for the record.
Great. What does that translate to? Are you bouncing songs off of him and production styles?
Yeah, I kind of just like asked him anything I needed to ask him, and he made himself available for that role. Very generous man. He supported a lot of younger musicians, like Doors and Blake Mills.
Sure.
Yeah, he's such a generous man.
Yeah. Now he is sort of the consummate guitar geek, and I guess the fact that he's tearing apart old Yamaha bodies and making his own inventions kind of is a testament of that. But are you a guitar geek, or are they just kind of tools for you and you use what you have?
I'm not a guitar geek in terms of like spending loads and loads of time geeking over them, but I am in the sense that I look for the right instrument for the right song, and that takes, you know, time and dedication. And I suppose once you find the right instrument, then you're good. But I don't like to put like too much focus there because you only have so many hours. And if I had to choose, I would be putting it into songwriting.
Yeah. And are you writing songs all the time?
Yeah. I do write a lot and create a lot. And, it's just a matter of balance. I do feel like I have quite a few instruments now that, but, you know, if I get called for a session or if I'm doing my own stuff, that I have enough instruments to choose from. And, you know, like, we all lend each other instruments here in L.A., mm-hmm. like this group of us. If somebody needs something, like, we should lend them or whatever. It's not a big deal.
What does the life of a session guitarist look like these days in 2019 in LA? Can you kind of describe some of the varying sessions you get roped into?
My gosh, I mean the session scene is dying. Like it's minimized substantially every year. It gets like smaller and smaller because most people are now making records in their living rooms, their laptops, and a lot of instruments from drums to bass are programmed or played on a keyboard. So, it's just less and less of that, which, you know, is fine for me because I'm spending more and more time doing my own stuff and working with other artists on different collaborations. But I've heard from the people that, you know, spend their lives doing just session work that they're, you know, struggling more than ever.
I can only imagine, yeah. Yeah. It's a crazy business. Are you going to be going on the road with this music?
Yeah, I'm touring. In 3 weeks, we kick off an East Coast tour. I think there's like maybe 9 shows then. And I'll be looking to do a few shows in July. And then I'm going to China and China's not announced, but I think it's going to be announced any other day. So maybe just don't mention that until it's announced. But Japan is announced in August. And then I'm looking to go to Europe and Australia at some point, maybe at the end of the year, or if not, then early next year.
Nice.
So, yeah, I want to kind of try to get everywhere eventually, you know.
Sure.
Matter of time.
You mentioned China and Japan. Are you big over there?
I know. Definitely in Japan, I have an audience because I've played there numerous times with Jeff Beck.
Sure.
I have no idea about China. I've never played in China with anyone before, but there seems to be some sort of demand for me there. So
cool.
Yes, we'll see. Yeah. I know Europe's definitely a target because I've played there with Jeff and with Herbie, and I kind of can't wait to go there. I just like the lifestyle there too.
Yeah, you've played with like the most amazing musicians ever. Are there any more of those tours in the horizon, or are you kind of just focusing on your own stuff right now?
Right now, I'm focusing on my own thing, thing because, you know, the pendulum swung so much to one side of me doing a lot of touring with other people and sessions. And so now it's sort of swung all the way to the other side, and it'll, you know, probably center itself at some point, especially now that I got this first one in the can. But, you know, I do want to spend time focusing on touring this album for sure. And I really enjoy playing with my band. They're really great musicians.
And are these guys you found just through the LA scene, or are they kind of spread out all over the place?
Yeah, I met them. The guitarist, besides me, Owen Barry, I actually met through Jeff Beck, and Jeff was speaking very highly of him. Owen Barry. And Tamir Barzilay is playing drums, who I actually just met at a show one night, and I could just tell he was a good musician. And Rachel Eckroth is the latest addition, who has recently been opening for Rufus Wainwright and accompanying him in his band. And so she'll be joining us. So that's exciting because she's also a great singer, and there's quite a lot of harmonies on my album. So, yeah, I'm super excited.
Very cool. Well, yeah. I can't say enough great things about the record, and congratulations. It's very cool.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm excited to get it out there.